Welcome to the Packet Pushers Podcast, a show about data networking. This is another show in our series from HP Discover Barcelona 2014. And today we got a couple of topics that we're going to cover with some good HP folks here that have come by to chat with us. First up, we will cover the HP 4500R switch and some news about that. And then we're going to segue into a conversation about SDN in the campus. So first, let's go around the table and just to meet everyone and see who all is here. First up, Mr. Farrow is joining us once again.
Hola.
Hola. See? Yeah. That's
I saved that one up.
It's about 25% of my Spanish right there.
Yeah, that's what might be the only one other than dos pia. Por favor.
Más una cerveza, por favor.
So we're in HP Discover in Spain, and we're getting through a bunch of content here on HP networking. We're starting to get to some good stuff because we're back on the campus this time. Enterprise LAN, if you will.
Joining us also is Chris Young. Chris, how are things?
Things are kind of jet-lagged, but good. Yeah. It's been, you know, we're almost at the end of day one now, and it has been... you know, a little bit of snark, a little bit of sarcasm mixed in with the event, so it's been good.
Yes, the blogging community that you're partially responsible to shepherd at this event were not overly kind during the keynote, I noticed.
No comment.
Also joining us is Heather Giovanni.
Hello, I'm a software architect for HP Networking, based out of Roseville, California.
Now, software architect for HP Networking, and I heard you say something earlier about lab. So they got you back in a corner, kind of a darkened room.
We wish we could.
I call the R&D lab the labbies. They don't let us out very often, uh-huh. And when they do, they usually regret it. So I'm going to try really hard not to make them regret this. There's a chance I'll get to come back.
You'll notice that her HP shirt looks like it came straight out of the bag today.
It totally did. Yeah.
It doesn't get washed and ironed. I'm just saying. It's a little obvious that the shirt's a new one.
Yes. Yeah. So you don't get it.
Great of you to join us. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
And Craig Mills is also here with us.
Hi, thanks. I'm the Global Product Line Manager for SDN Campus Solutions.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
So, a lot of big burden on your shoulders there.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm busy. I am definitely busy.
There you go. Well, okay, so let's open up this discussion about the HP 5400R. You guys had some, first of all, how about some background about that switch? Because people that listen to the show that are somewhat familiar with the HP product line know there's a million switches out there. So give us just briefly the distinguishing characteristics of the 5400R and then what it's good for. How does it fit in my world?
Okay, the 5400R is a replacement to the 5400 and 8200, which are our chassis in campus. So there's a 6-slot and a 12-slot chassis. Redundant management modules. What else?
Those are half width slots.
So it's really like more like a three rack width, two half slots. Okay, so 6-slot and 12-slot in that sense. Got it.
Yeah. So our 5400 and 8200 supported our V1 and V2 blades. Mm-hmm. The 5400R will only support right now the V2 blades and new blades going forward.
And so these are big Ethernet switches with lots of 10 gig and 40 gig. They are non-blocking. Tell us a little more about how it fits in the world in that sense.
So what I would kind of say is where it traditionally has fit is that it has been, instead of stacking a whole bunch of switches together in your closet through some, you know, board cables in the back plane, it's just a chassis switch that fits in your closet. Right.
Okay.
So it same kind of a cost segment, same feature sets of what you would traditionally see in stackables. And some people really like stackables, but other people really like chassis. So you get those same kind of dual supervisor
engines. The chassis versus rack thing.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. And the thing about stacking, a lot of people don't know, and I'll just jump out a little bit here, but the chassis, there is a big difference between stackables and chassis in the internal technology, because when you stack a chassis out of one IU switches, the backplane that connects them together is often shared, and it's not very high bandwidth. It might be 40 gig, it might be 80 gig. Yep. And so if you're running a 48 1 gig ports, 40 gig is oversubscribed a little bit. But if you're running a few 10 gigs and then you're stacking, you're actually oversubscribing that bandwidth quite massively. So increasingly, stacking is cheap and nice and modular and can be low cost for moderate performance environments. Stacking works okay. But if you need to sort of take it up a notch and start to get into more high density and you want to simplify things, I mean, I'm looking at the website here in the backplane, and this is 2 terabits per second. So that means that every port on every blade can run at wire speed all over the place, no questions asked. Is that about right?
Yep. Yes. Yes.
And, you know,
so I mean, I guess the other big talking point for this box is the support for PoE Plus on all ports
at the same time. Yeah.
Okay, just, so you stuff big old power supplies in them.
You can, if you want to heat your closet, you can heat it.
So for high density wireless environments, for big IP phone environments, this switch is going to fit in there. So it's got big bandwidth, big power. It is slotted in for campus as opposed to data center. Is it layer 2 only? Does it do layer 3 as well?
It does layer 3 as well. So same as the 5400 and 8200, it will run routing protocols, multicast routing protocols.
What about IRF?
It will not support IRF.
This does not do IRF. Okay, correct. So that's good to know for people that are IRF shops, yeah.
So the other thing I think that's interesting about this as well, which is kind of funny from the HP, you know, and NFV, we tend to put a lot of network functions in servers. We actually did the opposite, and we took VMware and one modules and put them in the 5400. So you can actually do the opposite, put your servers in your network. Right? So
there's some shops that the network guys just can't buy servers. Or don't want to manage servers. And sometimes it's just
like
nice having the multiple.
I don't understand the servers network
well,
core, but it's so this, complex.
This is ITIL. ITIL says that tasks must be isolated so they can be segmented and then tasks, right?
Yep.
And so if you're a networking guy and you need a server, only server people are allowed to, designated server engineers are allowed to serverize servers, right? Hmm. And so you go and talk to the server engineer and guess who's least important on a stack of a queue? Right, and and of course there's communication barriers, and you're supposed to talk about project managers, and so the idea is that if you can, you're saying you can just, instead of putting an Ethernet switch blade in a slot, you can just slot the server home, and then you can run your.
I yet to have a customer come and complain to the server guy that DNS or DHCP server is down.
Yeah,
it shows up at the network guy, and if you don't have any access to that server, you're. Nothing you can do.
But this is really just an x86 blade of some kind. Yeah. You slot it in, you load ESXi on it, and then off you go to run.
A couple of 1 gig for management.
And then they connect directly onto the backplane.
Power sucking
alien. Yeah.
Yeah. It's PSA.
A little parasite.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's nice.
Yeah. But it gives you flexibility because sometimes having that server in the edge of the campus can be quite useful. As you say, DNS, DHCP. Maybe you want to use it as a, you know, packet capture, packet analysis, if you're into that.
Yeah. We've seen smaller customers use as kind of a branch in the box.
I was just going to say,
Windows 2012 has a read-only domain controller for branches, you know, things like virtual routers that you can put in this thing, all those great things. So there's a lot of different applications. It starts to be, what can I do with a virtual image now that I've got all these different services out there?
Yep. There's lots of things you can do, Like I said, branch in a box, you can put cache register app on it or something like that if you're doing sales apps, things like that. Almost anything.
Yep, Riverbed WAN acceleration. There's a lot of different virtual appliances.
So you could start to put virtual appliances in that blade, firewalls, load balancers, proxy servers.
SDN.
SDN.
you could put an SDN controller in there too.
Yep.
Even beyond that, I mean, this switch is slated or is part of the SDN in the campus strategy for HP. It's another one of these switches that runs OpenFlow.
Yep.
And so it fits into that world. So, okay, now a lot of times on the Packet Pushers podcast, we're talking about SDN in the context of the data center. So much news and energy and productization that's been going on around that, and SDN in the campus doesn't get so much talk, and yet it's kind of an intelligent place to start
putting SDN.
Mm. So talk about that.
So that's what I spend all my time doing, so we can go in deep here. Some of the first SDN use cases that HP really got involved on really fit a little bit better in the campus than the data center. We've had OpenFlow in our switches since before it was OpenFlow. In 2007, we worked with Stanford on a Ethane project, which later transitioned into OpenFlow. And it's been part of our normal switch software build on the campus product lines for at least, I think, 2 years now. You can't get a download of code release without it.
Yep. And even if you've got some of the older switches, like some of the ProCurves and stuff, like quite a lot of customers.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember
there was some backporting on some of those.
Yeah, like you can go back to 8-year-old products and just do a code upload, and you've got OpenFlow enabled or SDN ready switches. Yeah.
I took a 3500 YL, which is I don't even know how old that thing is.
2006.
It was dusty, very dusty. I had to do some boot ROM jumps to get up there, but
I'm sure you did.
Just running 1.3 and
yep.
SDN in the home network.
Well, why don't you tell that story? That's a great story that you were telling me about. You had the switch running standard layer 3, and then you...
So I've got some issues. I got some gear in my house.
I know you've got issues, but...
Yeah. So, and
we're not a personality show. You know, we're not here to help you. We're just
in my day job as a management guy. I'm concerned a lot with the operational impacts of what SDN is going to do to the network, and what is it going to do to us as our jobs, is how we manage networks, and from an overall, like, what does this mean when you start putting it in? And I like to break things. So I decided, what better way to see how this is going to break things than I would run a live voice call running over IP over layer 3 all over the place, and let's just turn on OpenFlow just for giggles during
the
call.
In your house?
In my house, yeah.
Yeah, you do have issues.
Yeah. And the really cool thing was, is I noticed probably about a quarter of a second of gap. You know, and that's in my terms. So, you know, how I'm not spirant, but I think I can measure about a quarter second.
You noticed something was missing, but not enough to.
I noticed that, and that was back.
So you literally enabled SDN in the code after doing all the code upgrades, et cetera, yep. While it was fly, and you just lost a bit of.
I lost a quarter second of voice packet. Like cell phones are worse. Right. Cell phones are way worse than what I experienced. And then I could turn it back on and off. And actually, it's funny that it's ridiculous. Like, ooh, look, I OpenFlow enabled. Ooh, look, I turned it off. And nothing happened. Right? So it was really interesting to me that I could actually go and say, I don't know if I would do this to everybody with change control and ITIL in the world we live in, but you could actually OpenFlow enable your network just by turning that command on, assuming you're at the right version of code.
Yes.
And your users would actually not see an impact. I wouldn't, don't do that. Change control is good.
Yeah. But the point is that, you know, just turning it on doesn't require catastrophic, you know, tearing it down, replacing boot ROMs and physical chips and adding memory or whatever the hell it is. It's just...
I didn't even log into the website. I downloaded the free code because it's in the HP warranty.
Yep.
No behind paywall thing, and just put it on.
Mm-hmm.
Read the release notes.
As in, I don't have to have a contract to upgrade my HP switch because I've got a lifetime warranty that lets me keep it upgraded?
Yeah. I mean, we've touched on a few different things here. I mean, just being able to enable OpenFlow on the switch gets you so far. Without the controller, you're a little bit, mindless to some extent. But some of the unique things we've done with the controller is enabling this hybrid network, which really lets you not have to do the standard SDN things.
Yes. So define hybrid for us in this context.
Yeah. So the hybrid we're talking about here is there's this one line in the OpenFlow 1.3 spec says any switch that can do action forward normal has to have a normal forwarding plane. So a normal forwarding plane is put together with spanning tree, OSPF. Basically, anything that can forward your packet today, you have to have that.
It's networking as we've known it for the last 20, 30
forward
years.
Normal. Sure. Just take it and do the normal
standard
thing
L2, L3 routing.
Yeah. And so
do what you do until I tell you otherwise.
Yep.
So what we've been using and what's now standard in our SDN controller is we push a single OpenFlow rule. When you point the controller at a switch, we push one rule and it says forward everything normally. As in, don't do anything to the network.
Is there an OpenFlow entry that's actually there on that point? Because it's in OpenFlow mode, so it's got to have some kind of directive there.
I mean, OpenFlow's got all sorts of ways to trip yourself if you don't do it carefully. But this puts in, a single rule, matches everything, OpenFlow normal, forward normal, as the last entry to be hit. And so any other rules would go in at a higher priority, and you'd hit those first.
So the initial processing is still going to be some kind of OpenFlow. If the only entry in there is process it normally, then it's going to be forwarded out via traditional legacy control plane protocols that we're used to and have been using for a long time. Okay.
And so the interesting thing about that is it gets us past a whole bunch of SDN OpenFlow scalability, performance issues out of the gate.
Yep.
Right, because it becomes an extension process.
Yeah. And it also helps customers, right? Yeah. I mean, there's less fear. When you say, hey, I'm just going to turn this on, and it doesn't fundamentally take anything down, right? Yeah, you just keep doing what you're doing, turn it on, then I can start looking at stuff, investigating, and trial and error, and see what kind of flows I want to program.
So we put that in. There's some if everyone knows how OpenFlow works, I'll just make that as a base assumption here.
Yeah.
There's lots of shows that we've recorded about OpenFlow. Just look through the catalog if you're unfamiliar with it.
So packet hits the switch. Switch doesn't know, does a table miss? There's nothing. Doesn't know what to do with the packet. OpenFlow standard says send it to the controller. Controller then figures out what to do, pushes a new flow entry down. The next packet doesn't miss the table because there's an entry for it.
Yes.
We've said we've put an entry in here that matches every packet.
Yes.
That means nothing gets sent to the controller. So we've now blinded our controller. So we've added some other things above that to give us visibility into what's actually happening on the network. We've got some other stuff that select out
some topology discovery information so we can see the topology.
We've got other few entries to do some copies of DHCPs and things like that, so we now have host visibility, where these different hosts are on the network. And that gives the controller a lot more information about how things are connected and where they are, but without sending everything to the controller. So those two things in combination get us what we think is a nice balance between performance and visibility.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
good,
hybrid.
Good scale, good good and performance at that point. You don't have that punting to the controller and the delay that's involved in that, which can be milliseconds. And
And that's exactly the way that Facebook and Google. So if you read into the recent rash of blog posts around Facebook's Altoona architecture and what Google does with theirs, is that 90-95% of the traffic at the top of rack is BGP rooted for them. That's their designs, right?
Yes.
And everything just follows that layer 3 route across the backplane. But then they have rules in the top that says special traffic, and there's flow entries that say, if I'm this is my special traffic, I'm going to do something with it. I'm going to count it, analyze it.
Yep.
I'm going to pop it off onto a different path instead of following the default L3 path or the default L2 path, send it out this interface, which is, you know, specially reserved for blessed packets, right?
Yeah.
And that's fundamentally, that's how your network works, right? The bulk of the traffic in most networks is let it go.
Yeah,
right?
And this goes back to the conversation I think we had, I think it was 2 years ago at the WWAS, where I was like, yeah, no, SDN, it's great, I like it, but stop having to be the solve all for everything. I mean, we've spent, you know, a long time
years,
really perfecting some of the technologies and networking, and the hardware does it, and it does it well.
Yeah.
So to come in and say, oh, trash it all, we want software to do everything, doesn't make a lot of sense, right? Keep doing what you're doing and then bring in the software where it makes sense, where the hardware is not able to do what you need.
The 20-80 rule.
Yep. Yeah.
20% of the traffic gets 80% of the effort.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right?
So the IP telephony or the video conferencing or the security traffic for, you know, but 80% of the traffic just needs to.
And philosophically, what, you know, to speak to your point, why replace what's working? What you want is some additional functionality that lets you do things you couldn't do before.
Or
it,
if it was too
to
hard to do before.
Or,
sometimes we can do stuff a lot easier with SDN.
Yeah,
than
you can do
like,
a lot with policy-based routing.
I'd
rather shoot myself in the face.
Exactly. It's like, please don't make me.
a lot of the way we've been talking about it is it's a kind of the value-add pop, right? I don't want to go in and replace your OSPF and spanning tree because it's working. I could do that eventually, but when you, I mean, there's a lot of people out there working on L2 learning switches in OpenFlow.
Yeah.
It's like, man, really?
Don't get me started.
The hardware does it so well. Why does that again? And so what we've done is we've tried to do just value add on top of an existing network. Everything's running, everything's flowing, and like as you guys are saying, go reach into the network, pluck out the interesting traffic, get copies of it, get the original package, do what you need, and put it back in.
So again, that exception processing. You've got a few rules looking for specific things sitting in the top of the processing order as traffic flows into that port.
Yep.
And then if it doesn't happen to hit anything, it just flows on through and out it goes. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So just now, one thing that I recall from, you know, the early OpenFlow models that I remember seeing, which was, you know, every I've got an OpenFlow entry, and if I don't, I got to punt it to the controller so he can tell me what to do with it. And you mentioned, well, the controller is kind of blind now because we don't do that anymore. Mm-hmm. What are the disadvantages that we're getting to because of that blindness?
Well, I mean, we put the other rules in, so we're not completely blind.
Yeah,
so, right?
so we put
three or four rules.
I'm guessing an LLDP probably for topology discovery.
Yeah. So we're in the campus, and we use LLDP in the campus for many things. And so overloading it just seems like a really bad idea.
Mm.
A lot of people who suggest using LLDP for topology discovery really want you to turn it off in the switch software, and they want the controller to send synthetic LLDP packets out. So the controller can do tell the switch to send a packet out, and it sends the whole body of the packet.
Mm-hmm.
And then the switch pushes that into the data plane. And that's what a lot of people do for topology discoveries. The controller creates an LLDP packet and then pushes it out of all the switch ports. Meanwhile, it has a corresponding rule in all the switches it's connected to, which says send all the LLDP packets to the controller. And that way, it's just that's how it discovers all the connections. We do a similar thing, but it's I think it came out of one of the PlugFests, the ONF PlugFests. We do it with the BDDP protocol, which I don't think hardly anyone's heard of, Broadcast Domain Discovery Protocol. I didn't make it up.
Broadcast Domain Discovery Protocol. I got to look that up.
I think there's probably two web hits in Google on it, but it does exist.
There'll be more.
And what we've done, I think we use an ether type, basically, or overloaded. Use a new ether type, one that's not being used, but it's essentially LLDP. And it's got the same similar restrictions. It's not link, it's broadcast domain limited. But that way we're not overloading LLDP and you don't have to turn it off on the switch, because in the campus we need it for the APs and the POE and all sorts of other
stuff.
Okay.
Sorry. Segue, but...
Yeah. So let's move the conversation ahead a little bit. We've pretty well established hybrid SDN and what it means to HP in this context, and how it works with OpenFlow, exception processing and so on, I think is a reasonable way to describe it. Let's get to some use cases. Cool. Here's this infrastructure. Now, in the campus environment, we're not talking data center and campus, what do I do with that?
So we've got two solutions that are out there that you've been able to buy since March of last year. I think we've released our third revision of it, 1.2 or 1.3. So the 1.0 is released end of March. That's the holy grail of what SDN was supposed to bring us, was the fast revolution and innovation in the software layer, and we're starting to realize some of that. So the two solutions are, the first is security-based, and the second is UC&C, so helping Microsoft Link and adding some new capabilities to Microsoft Link. The security one, I think, is probably a little bit more broadly applicable. So,
and it's going to be more useful, but more complicated, the security stuff. Like all good security stuff, there's no one answer.
Yeah.
So the Link app I've heard of, and I've talked a bit about it, and how I understand it, I'm kind of, you guys seem to know really the nuts and bolts of how this thing works. Now, how it's been explained to me at a high level is the VAN controller, HP VAN controller, has a connection to the Microsoft Link server in such a way that the VAN controller is notified by Link, hey, I'm about to stand up a call between these two endpoints, a voice call or a video call. VAN then takes that information and says, okay, I know where these two endpoints live that are about to talk to each other, and I need to set up a QoS path between the two of them dynamically, however that those endpoints are going to talk to each other, whatever the flow is through the network, and then QoS is enforced. Low latency queuing, whatever it might be. And so so let's break down what's really going on there.
Okay. So Microsoft came out with a Link, I forget what the Diagnostics API, I think is what it was originally called, and they've renamed it to the SDN API, and it's downloadable off
it
Microsoft.
It was just Diagnostics, and then it was the Diagnostics API that you could actually access, and then they changed
and then
it to
changed
SDN.
To SDN.
Yeah. Hey, it's useful.
And... really, that today it's one directional. They send to, so there's an SDN app listening to this, and it's basically giving who's talking to who. So
by one way meaning we've got something coming from the Link server into the controller. Yes. There's just a listener on the controller.
So not a tightly coupled.
If you think about what's happening
when
a call gets dialed, right? This is the voice guy in me comes out. yes, I was a voice guy. So you're going to contract the PBX, whatever that is, in this case Link, and Link is going to do that call setup state, and I'll do that auto negotiation between the ports and all those kind of things. So it has both sides of that connection. So now that I know both sides of the connection, the UDP ports that we're using for our RTPs, our real-time protocol streams, all that good stuff, right now I can tell the controller what that connection state is going to look like. So I've got that information, and that's where that information gets handed back to the controller.
Link is probably, I think, defaults to TCP and encrypted and all sorts of other.
It does, yeah.
Network
yeah.
nasty. So we get the endpoint information, everything from IP to port numbers, user IDs. We also get whether they're wirelessly, VPN, or wired connected. All that information gets dumped into the app. And as you said, the SDN app then knows the ingress for both sides. And originally, the app did plan a path through the entire network and plumb it out. And one of the things we did with trying to go and make these kind of a value-add capability is we just wanted to do marking on the edge. Assume you only have OpenFlow on your edge switches and you've just got traditional. You didn't want to replace your core with OpenFlow day one. We still wanted to give you value.
So marking on the edge is interesting because Link does not mark by default. It is possible to do it. I've researched this, but by default, it does not mark traffic. incredibly annoying.
Well, yeah, and the other thing is, do you want to trust it? Right? Yeah. Because now you're trusting someone's laptop.
Yeah, I have an app
marking.
Running, and it's going to mark the traffic.
Yeah. So it goes through, and it basically pushes a single OpenFlow rule to each ingress switch, which lifts up that flow in QoS, right? Remarks the DSCP and the cause.
Yep.
And you're good to go. As long as you have QoS configured in the rest of your network, you're good to go. So it's really about the classification.
Okay, so this app is specifically classifying traffic. Packets on ingress to the switch are going to get this cause value mapped at layer 2 and this DSCP value mapped at layer 3, and then send it on its way on the assumption that QoS already exists and is going to honor those marks.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
So we don't plumb it end-to-end. There's no end-to-end OpenFlow rules. It's ingress only, and the OpenFlow rules are just for the QoS mark.
So the app classifies, the controller marks, and the network respects what's done.
Yes. Well, yes, assuming that that's...
Assuming no one's wiped it out.
I mean, and you've designed your network correctly, so that the controller is configuring all the boxes to get the classification, to respect the classifiers.
So that's a question in my mind at this point in the conversation. Is the SDN controller plumbing or creating a QoS scheme that's been deployed, or is that reliant on a network engineer to have done that already?
Yeah, it's at this point, it's still the network engineer.
Okay, got it.
We classify that as the 80% rule. So the idea is that most of the campus customers are using QoS and have it set up already.
You shouldn't be turning on QoS without anything set up above L2. You're not going to get much out of that.
Yeah.
But that's just QoS in the app. And while that's interesting, that's really not very SDN. To me, a lot of the capability of SDN in the campus is I can bring outside data into my network and have it really influence real-time what's happening on my network. Whether it's HP stock price can change which port you want to send your traffic out of. You can do anything. And this is one of the... I've been in networking 20 years. This is one of the most interesting things that's ever happened. And, we used to have this box, and you only had 4 or 5 knobs to turn. PBR was your most flexible and yet your most painful knob to twist.
Yes.
BGP, you've got some good weights and stuff, but still... And now with SDN, we can do almost anything. And... as a vendor, we're trying to figure out, okay, we can do anything. What should we do?
You should make HP stock go up.
I'd get a lot of kudos for that. But so one of the things that we've been doing is tying in user identification to this application. So if you have Active Directory tied in and we know who these users are, if we know what user group they're in, and we're talking about QoS, let's say we've got two guys running a video chat and, they're... director wants to have a video chat. Today, if there's no bandwidth left, guess what? They don't get it. Or someone's going to, you've oversubscribed your SLA, you're going to have issues. Now with this app, I always pick on the help desk guys, I'm sorry. Two help desk guys abusing the network as they always want to. And the director wants to have a video chat. On the fly, we can go in, flip the QoS off for the help desk guys, flip it on and take it over for the directors. And so there just starts to be all this information that you can really be feeding into
the granularity of flows, right? Up until now, we've always had access lists.
Yeah.
And sure, we can do extended...
wildcode something in there.
We can do a source destination, source port, destination port.
Yeah.
But not... You can extend that out to a full tuple, but it's still not something that you can just go and add on the fly because you really need to be integrated with the app. Because the app needs to know that John and Joe are the ones who are downloading the video, sharing videos with, cheering last night's BitTorrent winnings or something, while the exec in the C-suite can't get video conferencing, so you can just say prioritize this session, click, done. It's about the visibility combining with the granularity of the new engines. It's not SDN as a magic bullet. It's about a whole ecosystem of change that's brought in. Right.
Yeah, so now being able to pull that user identification, not just their ID, but who they are in the organization and have that being able to influence how their network responds to
you,
that.
You can build a policy that influences network traffic based on Active Directory, how they're organized in there, what OU they're in, what other groups they're in, and then just build a policy that applies however you want to see traffic flow across the network based on that scheme.
But let me just remind you of a key piece of operational strategy here, is never give the C-suite the best bandwidth, because otherwise there'll never be any money to upgrade the network.
So if you'd like to create a budget opening event.
Yes. That's exactly right. It's been about 100 shows since we talked about this, but I've said this before, right? The secret to being really, really good as a networking is to have enough funding to buy the right technology. If you give the C-suite the best possible quality of service, they'll go, the network is fine. What's the problem? And so the people at the bottom get screwed over and over and over as the bandwidth gets worse and worse for them.
I'm just opposed to your traffic being treated differently based on who you are. Yeah. I think it's like paying for the carpool lane, man. I just can't get my head around it.
Let's switch over to security applications. I know who you are. I even know the last time you've logged into the network. So what do you want to do with that information? I haven't seen you in 3 weeks. You've been off on a sales call in China. You plug back in. Maybe I want to treat you differently. I want a different security policy for you as you plug in.
We're going to dump you into a VLAN that requires...
IPS pathway, you got to... Or service chain IPS, right? There's a lot of interesting things you can do. Yeah. The whole data center versus...
Well, I was going to come to that. I mean, I was thinking, you know, we always talk about SDN in the data center because that's where the pressing need is, particularly SDN around mobility. This idea of VMs moving around the network... And as the VMs move around the network, we have to take the policy with them.
Yep.
And at data center, we're talking about mission critical. We've got spanning tree weaknesses where the protocol sometimes just fails. Yep. You know, we've got scaling issues where the data center bandwidth is increasing beyond. So core switches aren't going to scale over time. And the arrival of things like 10 gig and 40 gig to the servers mean that we actually don't need that many switches anyway. What we need is a faster way to program. So if I instantiate a server, the network should configure automatically. But in the SDN in the campus, SDN, is going to be much more interesting, not because of the configuration capabilities, but because of the visibility capabilities.
Yeah. I mean, to me, the data center, a lot of the use cases for SDN seem to be around virtualization and overlays and orchestration of the data center, which is the pain point there.
Yeah.
But in campus, the pain point is much more about the policy management.
Who's doing what?
Visibility and what's going on, and then controlling or containing.
So the other one is path management. Today in the campus, you're using spanning tree at L2 and OSPF for L3, and I don't think there's too many more, you know, doing anything too far off that beam, right? But you really want, if you're building a campus, connecting up, say, if you've got a campus with 10 or 20 or 30 buildings, you can only cable this one to this one because it has to conform to the tree structure. But it would make more sense to connect building H to building J because they're right next to each other. But you can't because they're in the wrong part of the tree. What you really want is a partial mesh or a full mesh backbone, campus backbone, not a tree structure. You just want to be able to say, well, I'll just connect everything together and sort the bandwidth out later. And, you know, instead of having to trench 800 meters to that building because that's the root of the tree, do 50 meters between those two buildings and just make a mesh, right? Yeah. Add more bandwidth, whatever. And SDN is a step in that direction.
I get nervous when we talk about SDN and things like spanning tree because it's... We could do it someday, and we probably should. But there's a lot of a lot better use cases, and I don't know. There's a lot more. I guess we've kind of been delivering brownies to people, right? We've been having dessert with SDN, the stuff that we've done so far. The Link app we just talked about, the security app we can talk about in a minute. Those to me are kind of the desserts. Unique use cases you can't really do another way,
right?
And we haven't done policy.
Yep.
And I think we're starting to work around to, you know. We're making the spinach. Let's just drill into that for a sec.
There's fundamental limitations in the silicon that make it hard to do SDN everywhere.
Yeah.
Is that part of it? Or is it a software challenge?
Well,
it's
easy to do. So the data center is where everyone's excelling or was the first adopters of SDN.
Yep.
And I think there's a few reasons for that. The pain point, the amount of money people have to spend there certainly help. But also just having that software switch.
And it's
the speed you can, and the scale you can get stuff done in the software.
It's inside four walls.
Yeah.
So it's strictly, you know, the data center use case is fairly narrow, right? And virtual machines, servers in rack, very controlled environments, it's only going to, you can pretty rigidly define exactly what's going to happen when it comes to the architecture and the operation.
Yeah. And so I would say in the campus, we don't have any of those, right? We don't have, it's all in silicon. We don't have any control over the host OSs. We've got guest services. You've got very little control of anything beyond that.
We've got users.
Yeah. We've got users who all want to update their iPhones on the same day and crash the network.
That type of technology. So it's just a different challenge. It's not something you can just say, you know, that the use case is spread, there's less control, there's less discipline, there's less... And so it's just going to take time. I mean, Yeah. So if I'm a network architect and I'm building a canvas, I'm probably building it on a 10-year horizon, right, today. So if I'm sitting there thinking, you know, I've got dollars in my bank, in a budget, and I need to start thinking about an SDN strategy that's going to carry me through the next 10 years. Are we still evolving? Is it going to be there? Is it going to happen?
Most of the vendors who have SDN in their actual platforms and hardware really do a lot of it in TCAMs. And TCAMs are really expensive, both in power and ASIC footprint.
And limited number of entries you can shove in there.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's only 'cause,
and ultimately those entries limit the capacity to flow, to have flows.
I was actually going to make this point earlier, that that's one of the other advantages of hybrid, is by allowing the network to do what it's always done.
Yeah.
Take less entries.
We take way less entries. So the whole OpenFlow will never scale because of the hardware entries. This actually kind of goes, no, that's not an argument anymore.
And so there's, I mean, TCAM's great. It does great matching, wildcarding. That's the whole thing that TCAM does, is wildcard. But it doesn't give you any of the action set, right? And so traditional switches only do so much of OpenFlow because they do what I call natural acts. Mm. Right? They can change a source and dest MAC and also tick the TTL because that's a routing function, no problem. But they can't do something bizarre like, you know, I don't know, change the source IP address and nothing else.
Yep.
But that just doesn't, ASICs aren't set up to pipeline like that.
But they'll come in.
Yeah, but that'll happen. I think SDN in the next 10 years will see stuff, because you'll start to see ASICs that have been developed with SDN in mind.
Yeah, new line cards for chassis switches, new switches that have better, or, you know, we haven't needed these ASICs because we didn't need to do these things. Yeah. So we made the ASICs that we needed to do, which was spanning tree and forwarding and blah, blah, right?
Exactly.
But if I'm looking at an SDN campus on a 10-year horizon, which is, you know, most people... You know, I was talking to a guy the other day. He's running 12-year-old switches to the desktop. You know, I'm looking at him to go like 100 meg. You know, bought in the early 2000s, and that is
it works. Don't touch it.
All you're connecting is printers. Yeah. You know, he's connecting them to printers and a couple of, and still running Windows XP. You know, Windows 8 might be the year. I actually wonder if Windows 8 will drive a campus refresh across most people, a significant uptick. Because a lot of people are looking at those switches going, Windows XP, desktops, nothing needs to change and move on. Let's go and play in the data center. You know?
I wanted to go back to your point earlier, Craig, about we've been doing dessert apps, or what I would say the show-off apps. Hey, look, isn't this cool? See, here's something cool that you couldn't do before. But that we need the spinach. We need policy management.
Yes.
Well, what is that giving us, or how is that foundational? What are we going to build on top of that policy engine that you're talking about?
I think that gives us the whole thing we touched on a little bit earlier, where you've got the ability to integrate Active Directory into the experience that the people have. I mean, there's a lot of things today where you can log on and you get a policy, right? Per-user policy that gets pushed down when you log on.
Yes.
And so that exists today. It's a little complicated. But with SDN, you get a whole lot more, right? So do you want the policy for an end user to change when your internet link is congested? Maybe. Maybe you want to block his YouTube traffic at the ingress as he's entering the network. That's not a problem, right? And so it really changes what you think about as being policy. Right? Policy isn't anymore an ACL.
Yeah.
Right? Your policy is going to suck in some user identity.
Policy is not what the engineer can turn into an ACL.
Exactly. Yeah. You're no longer going through contortions to try to get
it. VLAN, because it's easier that way.
Yeah. And turning an engineer turning it into an ACL on 2,000 devices isn't a happy day.
So in marketing speak, we talk about business policy being instantiated in the network.
Yeah. Abstracting the policy out to make more sense. Mm.
You can really match that policy much more realistically and dynamically with SDN.
Yeah.
Critically and dynamically. Yes. Yeah, and that's where ACLs just fall all over themselves, because you're trying to predict and build this generic ACL that's going to match all the traffic you need it to match. Mm. Yeah.
The example I often use is bank tellers, right? What do you want your network to do at 5:30 Monday through Friday? Should it just keep working normally, or should you say, you know what, 5:30, there should be no one in the bank. Just shut off all the bank teller accounts. If someone tries to log in, and you can do that with login, but usually once you've logged into a system, you're on and you've got that policy. 5:30 comes, you're still logged on. With SDN, it's easy. 5:30, boom.
Ports go down.
Or you copy all the data somewhere else.
Yeah. Let's see what's going on.
Someone logging in at this. This is weird.
Yeah,
let's log that. 8:00 tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a lot of policy becomes a completely different beast.
So what about companies like, you've got a number of partners here doing SDN security apps downstairs and adding value to the VAN controller. Those types, do you want to mention any of those?
We've got a couple. We've got a we've got some load balancer with Camp's got one. I think Tech Mahindra's got a load balancer with SDN. F5, Fortinet.
Is Guardicore down there today?
No, Guardicore is here today.
And Guardicore we've mentioned, I think, on the show before with that that application. Yep. Yeah.
And SciSay is here
the dynamic
doing security.
The honeypot.
Yeah. SciSay is here doing their security apps. And they are integrating with the VAN controller. In, they're in the App Store, those companies, too.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So if you've got a VAN controller, you can go and press buy to have SDN app. Which is...
yeah. As a network app.
After you've raised a purchase order. I love that bit. Yeah.
But we've got a security app that we developed as well. The HP Network Protector. That's its third or fourth name for those of you who don't know the dirty story behind that.
Was this formerly Sentinel?
Yes, exactly. That was one of its four
the
names.
The app formerly known as Sentinel.
For some reason, legal wouldn't let us use that name. And really what it does, just to give people a brief overview, is we, once again, push down that single open flow rule that says any UDP 53, send it up to the application.
Which is DNS.
So we suck up all the
well done,
all the DNS throughout
well
the
done,
network.
Chris.
Oh wait, that's this show. Sorry, I take it back.
And we compare the DNS request against a list of known bad sites. So it's basically a reputation compare.
Yeah.
And then we either just send the DNS request back to the originating switch to re-inject into the forwarding plane, or we send back a no such.
Yep.
No such place. You don't want to just not respond because that ends up hanging the application.
They end up calling the help desk.
Yeah. So we respond with no such or we just send it on its merry way. And so if it's someplace we don't let you go and we reply with no such destination, once, okay, you've clicked a bad link, let's say you do 5, 6, 7 of them in a minute, that's not a bad link. That's usually a virus that's trying to get back to command and control. Yeah. And at that
we've
point,
talked about HP Sentinel a few times on previous shows.
Lots of
but,
cool stuff.
You know, the idea is once you're actually getting inside of the DNS request, there's a whole bunch of things.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you can look up an inspection database and you can say, oh, I need to make decisions now about blocking it at source.
Yeah.
And so that's
That's OpenFlow that's making that happen. Okay, here's my UDP 53 that comes in. OpenFlow, that's going to match an OpenFlow entry. It's going to see that. Send it up to the SDN controller who's going to pass it off to the app who can now make a decision.
Yeah, and then we send it back down. And but if you've seen enough of them, you can quarantine the box. And it's not quarantining like a VLAN quarantine. We just push down OpenFlow rules again that says you can't go anywhere except this remediation server. Yep. And by the way,
says, we think you're infected, go here.
But every DNS request you make gets answered with a remediation server IP, right? Just you're quarantined, and we're just going to shove you there.
That's
the only place we'll let you go. Or really the way we're taking that product is really it becomes a series of sensors and actions. So we're sensing that you're doing something bad. Today our action reply is we can quarantine you or we can alarm or we can block. And really it's going to start being, you know, are you doing port scans? We're going to start detecting other things and being able to add more actions to it.
Yep.
And so really it's about providing that security layer at the internal edge.
Yeah, at the edge, at the ingress, right out where the workstation connects.
Yeah, I talked to...
wireless is not SDN ready today, but...
Well, there's wireless APs announced.
Yes. Again, I'm on this 10-year arc, right? I'm not necessarily looking at what I'm doing today.
Yeah.
If I'm going to start putting SDN in the campus and have that eye on what products I'm buying and what I'm going to do, I want to know that my wireless can do this as well because people are just as much connected to the wired as the wireless. So I'm not expecting you to say SDN wireless is here, Greg, rush out and buy it, I think, but it's in the arc.
Yes.
Is it fair to say that it's in the pipeline?
Yeah, it is. And you have to think about where you want to have, especially with security, right? You want to be as close to the client as possible. You want to remediate and keep it as far away from your network as possible.
You don't want to be doing a security scanning at the internet gateway in the DMZ in the data center because you've already had the infection cross your entire WAN.
And that may be your AP, but that may be your first hop wired device depending on the network and how you've deployed that wireless. If you have a wireless network that really is only protected folks that are on it, maybe you say, I don't really need OpenFlow on my AP because I'm pretty sure that the traffic's okay and I'll deal with the OpenFlow at the access.
Well, you've already improved your security posture by even if you catch it at the wired edge where the wireless connects, where the base station connects to the campus, that's a much better security posture than capturing it at the DMZ in the internet gateway, right?
So the way I explain it to customers is you've got an IPS it's blocking the command and control. Great. You're not blocking any east-west that virus is done. Right. I took my Starbucks infected machine, plugged it into your network, and I'm going to hog heaven east-west until I hit the IPS. Your IPS is doing an awesome job of protecting the internet from my infected laptop, which isn't really what you want.
So defense in depth.
Yeah.
And, you know, getting the controls down closer to where the user is.
Yeah.
Because we all hate the users, and we just love getting in front of the senior VP who's just come back from somewhere and going, your laptop's infected. Mine. Remember, least level of service to the VP.
What's weird is I can see you doing more or less exactly that.
Yeah.
With a big smile.
I see the guy who canned the budget got a virus. Outstanding.
I'll put you in the queue.
Yeah. Dead machine. I'll be with you later today.
I can see it now. There'll be a new SDN app available in the store where it purposely targets everybody who makes buying decision with the worst possible service.
Budget time.
So what is this app?
Tell me I'm wrong. Come up. Tell me I'm not.
Is that malicious side though?
I know a guy who's probably coding it right now.
15 years ago, worked on a network that got the "I love you" virus, and all of a sudden, the proposal that had been stuck because we just don't have the money for a big antivirus package got approved. Yeah. It's extraordinary.
Within hours.
Oh, literally within hours. You are not wrong.
And I even got a nice email from him that said, "I love you."
Well, this has been a great discussion. I've enjoyed this very much. And one of the things that I love being able to bring home to the listeners that are skeptical about SDN is you can actually do stuff with it. And we're past the part of, oh, is it going to be a thing? Yeah, it is. And we're not only serving up brownies, we're serving up spinach now too, so to speak. So let's go around the table one more time real quick. And if any of you folks have a book you'd like to plug or a blog or anything else, Twitter handle, please let's share those things. And we'll start with Heather.
I barely social media at all because I'm an R&D lab person. I don't want to.
They don't let you talk.
No, they don't let me talk, and I'm not big on giving away my.
It's all secret. She doesn't trust herself.
Well, that's great. Thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
What about you, Craig?
So Chris warned me in advance to get my Twitter account, and I cannot.
You don't have one?
I think I have one, but I can't remember what it was. I opened it up like 2 years ago. Just to make sure I had one, but
so obviously you're not using it that much.
Yeah, yeah.
So if people follow it, they wouldn't.
There's no point in following you then.
Yeah. You will not learn what I had for breakfast. There was
You won't learn that on my account either. I promise.
Well, fair enough.
Yeah.
Well, Chris, what about you?
So Netman Chris at Netman Chris on the Twitters. And
you're really active out there.
Yeah.
Doing
yeah.
You're influencing.
Influencing
the influencers.
Yes. There's beer involved usually.
Do I have to tweet to influence?
Yeah.
Yes. And the only other thing I would say is, if you've got any of the, probably about last 5-8 years, go get the code upgrade, download the controller, www.hp.com/go/SDN, free download, it's good stuff, and it won't blow up your network much.
So, one of the things we're trying to do with a lot of the SDNs and the app stores is trying to get free trial versions of all the apps. One of the things we try to do is like a 60-day free trial, so you can download it, kick the tires a little bit.
Yeah.
Most customers actually have a 24-port switch sitting there probably somewhere in a dusty closet that you could pull out like I did, put new code on it, and start kicking the tires on and seeing what happened. Like that's the way to get
one. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So a couple of things. SDN the campus, I'm starting to get a nerd hard on about it because I think it's a lot more. The visibility and the control in the campus is something we haven't had. And we literally go up and put our switches in the rack and go, not seeing them, safe, not looking, right? And it's kind of like that. I'm more, while we've talked about today not doing full mesh, I'm more excited about full mesh. But then a lot of my perspectives are built on, if I'm building a campus network today, I'm building it for a 10-year arc. So I need to have a strategy that's 10 years out. You can't tell me that spanning tree is going to be around in 10 years' time. Right. It's you're going to be doing something different. It's going to be a fabric path. It's going to be BGP and MPLS. It's going to be something, right? So you need to start thinking about your campus in what does that future look like and what do you buy to make that. HP switches, very popular because of the lifetime warranty. We didn't mention that here today. But the campus stuff that goes into that thing is free software updates and free hardware upgrades, maintenance for the life, right?
There's some upgrades. We'll send you new blades.
Hardware maintenance, software upgrades.
Software upgrades, right?
Yeah.
So that makes a big difference to the total cost of ownership compared to other vendors. Now, so you keep that in mind. So if you are going to go out there and look at your campus pricing, look very carefully at your maintenance, your total cost of ownership over 5 or 10 years, and see how much you're paying for hardware maintenance over that time frame. It's usually cheaper to buy a bunch more HP gear and just have it sitting in the shelf and get it rotated than it is to actually get. Now, there are some caveats there, but notwithstanding that, often a far more practical go. And nice to see SDN shaping up. You know, we've been talking about it for 3 years now, and I know we've said this several times in the last 6 months, but nice to see it sort of maturing into, you know, it's...
We're talking about real products that you can actually buy and that do something. We're not talking about, it's going to be so cool.
Yeah. Oh, it's going to
look great on PowerPoint.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Look at all these great PowerPoint features. It's going to be so awesome.
Greg, of course, is at Ethereal Mind on Twitter, and you can follow him on his blog at etherealmind.com. I am Ethan Banks at EC Banks on Twitter. EthanCBanks.com is my blog. And this, of course, was Packet Pushers. PacketPushers.net is home base for us, where you can read the community blog, network engineers from all over the world writing about their experiences in the trenches doing real networking. And of course, if you would like to email us about this show or get in touch with Heather or Craig or Chris, we would be happy to pass along your messages. You can send an email to packetpushers@gmail.com. And last but not least, remember that too much networking would never be enough.